This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Sandra Bullock was very good. Some great acting and a story of triumph.
Did it top Miss Congeniality? That's the question.
Really? That's the one you're going to go for?
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, the Sandra Bullock of Education Policy, Michelle Gininger.
I'll take it, though I haven't seen Gravity, but and I really want to.
Yeah, I don't see many movies, being as, you know, a parent as I am with small children. I should say movies made for adults. I think, but I did see Gravity. It was good, not great. I mean, I thought a lot of people talking about it being amazing, so I had high hopes. It was solid. Sandra Bullock was very good. Some great acting and a story of triumph.
Did it top Miss Congeniality? That's the question.
Really? That's the one you're going to go for? Not Speed?
Speed was great.
Speed was a great movie.
Speed 2, not so great.
I don't remember seeing that one. Yeah. So that was her breakthrough, right? Was Speed?
Yep.
That was and well-deserved. Absolutely. Okay. So, as always, a lot to cover here on the Education Gadfly Show. So, let's get started playing Pardon the Gadfly. Pamela, start us off.
This week, Fordham released a report finding that even though most teachers reported that their schools were making significant progress towards implementing the Common Core standards, this does not seem to be the case. Should we be concerned?
All right. So first of all, let's explain, Michelle, why we think it's not the case. This was a report on the implementation of the English standards. And they ask schools to do a few things differently. First of all, they say that teachers should be assigning books that are challenging for students that are at their grade level, even if they're not at their reading level, right? So that means if a kid, say, is reading at a first grade level but is in third grade, they should be reading third grade books and the teacher should be helping them, right? Second thing is teachers should be selecting their texts and building their lessons around those texts and building the skills as a result, instead of focusing on these little discrete skills, reading skills instead. In both of those cases, elementary school teachers not doing it yet.
It's a really exciting study, though the findings are a bit worrisome, especially along these lines. And I think it speaks to a greater problem that Common Core implementation could be seeing, which is, yeah, we love Common Core. Yeah, we're doing it. And we're just branding everything we've been doing before as Common Core aligned. Right. I think this is another example of that. And the solution, in my opinion, is PD, professional development. We really have to be teaching these ELA teachers to change their instructional shifts. I mean, they have to make the changes to make this happen.
You have to make a change. I feel like a Michael Jackson song is coming on. Looking in the mirror. Well, here's the problem, right? So teachers, and so what they also said in the survey was that they like the standards and they believe that their district's implementing it. So the worry is that teachers think they're implementing the Common Core faithfully, right? They think they're doing what the Common Core standards are asking. But then when we ask them, are you doing things like assigning these tougher books? The answer is no, right? And so then you say, well, then they must not have a firm grasp of what the Common Core is asking them to do. So we need professional development, but it's got to be led by people who themselves know what these standards are asking for. And so, I mean, on the one hand, you have this game of telephone where, you know, you have different people spreading the word about what these standards do or don't do. You'd think we wouldn't need to play telephone in the age of the internet.
Huh? Well, the internet might be worse than telephone.
Well, right.
That's have you read some things on the internet?
You can't trust it all, can you? But you could go straight to the source. You can read the standards. You can go to the people who wrote the standards, see what they have to say about them. You know, so you got to make sure the professional development is solid. All along, we've been worried that state and district officials have been trying to sell people on the Common Core by saying, you know, it's not a big deal. These are really largely aligned with what we were doing before. Well, in most cases, that's just not true. And we need to face up to the fact that these standards ask for some very different kinds of practices in some areas. Now, maybe when the tests hit in a year and a half, and some schools that think they're doing everything right don't do some well, maybe that will get their attention. Maybe when they look at what's on the test, they'll say, oh, now I see what we're supposed to be doing. But it would be a shame if we had to wait until then.
I hope so. I mean, my other concern is that this is going to happen. What's going to happen to Common Core is what's going to happen to most ed reforms that sort of don't go as intended, which is the richer kids in safer, better schools aren't harmed so much, and the low performing schools and students at these schools are the ones who suffer. And it's a shame that we finally get high standards that most of the state signed on to that has bipartisan support, and it's not going as
well as we would like it
Now,
to.
Keep in mind, this was really a baseline study. Yes. We surveyed the teachers last year, so this is early days. Hey, tell us, what were some of the popular books that teachers out there are assigning today? Can you tell us?
Well, I have to say The Raven made it a poem, and let me tell you, I hated that poem. Mm-hmm. I had to memorize it in the 10th grade, and mm-hmm. it was awful.
Thank you for sharing. Again, the Common Core is not really interested in your opinions, Michelle, anymore. That is not a Common Core line to answer.
That's true. See, if I had had Common Core, I would be much more successful in life.
Michelle, you can't be more successful. You're on the Education Gadfly Show.
Oh, you're right.
Okay, topic number two.
The results of New York's hard-fought, revamped, and supposedly tougher teacher evaluation system are in. 91.5% of teachers were rated either highly effective or effective, 4.4% were rated developing, and just 1% were rated ineffective. What happened here?
Are you surprised?
No, I mean, I feel like every time a state or a district redoes their teacher evaluation systems, this is what happens. We get the same answer. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to my doubt that maybe I don't think states can do teacher evaluations well. And I think the real answer here is it would be great if we lived in a world where principals had the opportunity to really do this and had the autonomy to decide what teachers they wanted and didn't. But I think we're a long way off, and this might be a band-aid to a much, much deeper stab wound.
So there's a couple different ways I would nice, by the way, a band-aid on a stab wound. Ouch. Okay. I think there's a couple different ways of looking at this. First of all, I don't know that these numbers look all that crazy. I mean, I could believe that 90% of the teachers in New York are pretty good teachers, you know, and that basically, I mean, it depends what this category developing means. Basically, that means teachers who suck, but, you know, may not suck enough to get fired this year, right? I mean, that, you know, so you're saying about 5% of the teachers got one of the two lowest ratings. You know, Eric Hanishek's been saying, hey, if we could just fire the worst 5% of teachers, we'd make these huge gains. So, you know, 5% in those categories doesn't sound totally out of range for me. At the same time, as I've written before, and you've hinted at, you know, the question is, can the principals do anything about it? If they give somebody a bad rating, and that's going to make them mad and create tension and bad blood, can they then fire that person? Or, you know, and if not, then, you know, nobody wants to give a bad rating to an employee that they are stuck with no matter what. Okay. Also, you know, to the extent that we see school districts and principals just going through the motions, bureaucratic motions on these teacher evaluations, we shouldn't be surprised. That's how people respond to mandates, particularly mandates they don't believe in. I wrote about this
this week. Sounds like a blog post you
it
just
is.
Wrote about.
Thank you, Michelle. Hey, I can only do so much. I have so many new thoughts. That this makes this much more like the supplemental services program under No Child Left Behind. This was the free tutoring, you know, which, look, I helped to work on this program. The internal logic was never, you know, had a big flaw, because the program said, okay, school districts have got to, under this mandate, contract out with private providers, including for-profit companies, to provide tutoring. And the more successful they are at making all that happen, the more their Title I money is going to go out the door to these private providers. If you manage to keep it a secret, not tell parents about it, make life impossible on your providers so that only a handful of kids get the tutoring, you get to keep the money. Well, guess what happened, right? So we see, this is just classic bureaucratic behavior that we see out here. And, you know, I just feel like we're taking a shortcut. We you know, these mandates are not the way to go. You've got to evangelize. Did I get that right? Evangelize. You've got to evangelize what is happening in places like DC with the impact system. Get local leaders bought in, work the politics, you know, push hard, do all those hard things to get, if you want to have systems like that, like impacts in DC and other places. I don't think passing laws and mandating it is going to get you there.
So I'm going to push back on that a little. I mean, you've written that, you know, we have to do teacher evaluations, but we also have to do reform our collective bargaining laws, and it all has to come as a package. And yet at the same time, you also have said, you know, there's no silver bullet in ed reform, that they're all incremental changes. So which is it? Should we do teacher evaluations and move the mark just a little bit, or do we have to wait till they all get done at the same time?
Well, I think that it's a good question. I think that we have to be very clear on what we can accomplish via policy at either the state or federal level, and what things need to really come grassroots up, and which means, you know, organizing in cities, you know, running reform-minded candidates at the local level, all of that. Now, the first job at the state level, I think, is to clear away the bad stuff, you know, the tenure protections that are way, you know, over the board, you know, the laws that say you get tenure after just a year or two, you know, so push that back to 5 or 6 years.
Hey, I'm almost at my Fordham tenure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm set for life. Yeah, I never have to tweet again to keep my job.
Exactly. We don't believe in that, do we? And I think that's where we've just got to be clear. Okay, topic number three.
A Politico article earlier this week profiled the swiftly growing power of Teach for America, noting in particular its flush reserves and its expanding and influential alumni network. Is TFA sidelining its mission of service in favor of gathering political clout?
No.
Maybe, but that's not necessarily a problem.
Look, I have to say, I was not a huge fan of this article by Stephanie Simon at Politico. And look, Stephanie, she's a hard-hitting reporter, and I know she's hasn't been shy about going after reform groups. I think that's healthy. But she does tend to try to turn all these stories into this sort of House of Cards style power plays of this and that and the other thing. Look, Teach for America is very clear. Part of their mission is to have this alumni network of people who care about schools, who believe that poor kids can learn, who are pushing for education reform, but also change, broader social change. I mean, this stuff is not controversial stuff. Is it powerful? Well, look, it was able to get a provision in the budget deal that finally went through to allow it to continue to exist. Okay, there's an existential threat to TFA in the No Child Left Behind Act, which, some people have interpreted as meaning that Teach for America teachers cannot teach in Title I schools. So every year they have to get that thing fixed. Does that show its clout? That just says it's, government affairs people are doing their job.
Someone on Twitter, and I forget who, but I like to cite my sources. So somebody on Twitter.
Is that their hashtag? Somebody on Twitter.
Somebody said, the unions have been doing this. They use their political clout all the time. And so what's the big deal if an organization that wants ed reform does the same thing? I don't see harm there. And that could have been mentioned in the story, perhaps.
Sometimes I think about how much has changed since I started in this space now, depending on how you count, 20 years ago, 15 years ago. When I first wanted to come to Washington and work in education reform, there was nowhere to go. I didn't know whose door to knock
on. There was Checker.
Right? There was, right. And even Fordham hadn't been invented yet. So, around that time, there was Fordham then, and then there was the Center for Education Reform. That was about it, So... we used to talk about the blob, and it was sort of a few of us think tankers, it felt like, against, this huge education system. Well, now we have the anti-blob. We have the reform movement, and, mostly that's a good thing. Sometimes it can be, we can fall into our own problems as well. But, Teach for America and the funding from the foundations and all that stuff that people like to pick at, it's all to try to level the playing field with the huge, enormous political influence and campaign spending and political raw political power of the teacher unions. And I think we're reaching a level where now there's some degree of parity between these two, and so we have a very divisive and polarized issue, but we're still catching up is what I'm saying, right? And I think what you're saying too.
Absolutely. And the great thing about TFA is it's every year producing more and more and more people who care about this issue and maybe not don't yet have kids and are out of school, so they might not naturally go to ed reform, and all's fair in love and politics.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I'm always curious about these people out of college, not having kids yet, and then...
As you glare at those people in the room.
Troublemakers. Supposedly, they are responsible for boosting the population of Washington, D.C., though. So,
yes.
As we've been learning this year. Okay, that is all the time we've got for Part in the Gadfly. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
Have you seen any movies, or is there not time in that movies? The world of a newlywed?
I saw Phantom the other night. We rented it. It's the submarine. It's like a rogue submarine during the Cold War. Did you see this?
No, sounds good.
Actually pretty good. I like this, mildly historically accurate, type movies.
Cool.
And it was mildly historically accurate. It makes you want to, Wikipedia, as if that's even more, accurate, to find out what was the real story.
Nice. Exactly.
So between Wikipedia and the mildly accurate movie, who knows what the truth was.
No, this is great, Amber. Thanks for putting a word in for core knowledge. There we go.
This is the researcher in me, right?
Okay, good. Well, we were talking about gravity earlier. Good, not great, but still we're seeing. Okay. Now, Amber, let me remind you that last week, where there was a kind of a lame research minute, truth be told, you promised a blockbuster this time.
I did.
What do you have for us?
And it's a blockbuster. I think some folks have written about it. Tom D. and Jim Wyckoff looked at the DCPS impact teacher evaluation. Everybody knows about this teacher evaluation, but finally evaluated, looked at whether it improves retention and performance. And I think most people know it's got these robust incentives and sanctions for teachers. It's got multiple measures. It's not just test scores. It's classroom observations. It's collaboration with colleagues. It's professionalism. So some things that teachers can actually control, more so than, you know, some of these other test score measures. They studied teacher level administrative and demographic data for K-12 DCPS general ed teachers over the first 3 years of impact, looked at their impact scores, obviously, which instantly places them in four categories ranging from highly effective to ineffective. If you're ineffective, you're basically immediately dismissed.
Love it.
Wow. In the next lowest category, you're subject to a dismissal threat. So you're basically fired the next year if your rating doesn't get higher. So there's a pretty big incentive here for these guys to improve. On the other hand, those who were highly effective, so at the other end of the spectrum, were eligible for a one-time bonus of up to $25,000. I think a lot of us heard this
Cha-ching.
In the news. Big money. As well as increases in base pay if they scored at the highest rating for at least two consecutive years. So now these guys got a pretty big incentive to stay top-notch. Mm-hmm. So analysts compared these two threshold groups, so that's important. It's not just an average effect. It's, all right, we looked at the low performer who are at that dismissal threat position, and we looked at the high performers who have might get that fat financial incentive. Ton of methodology caveats, but I'm just going to cut to the chase, which is that threat of dismissal increased the voluntary attrition of low-performing teachers by 11 percentage points.
Wait, so those are the teachers that would have been fired a year later if they didn't improve.
That's right.
They just said, forget about it.
And improve the performance of teachers who remained.
Okay.
By 0.27 of a standard deviation. So, you know, maybe puts the other ones on alert a little bit. They also find that the financial incentives improve for the highest performing, so the other group, specifically teachers who originally scored at above or at the highest rating in year one scored roughly 10 percentage points higher in year two. So, again, that
percentage
that
points on the impact scale.
Scale. Because remember, they're trying to, you know.
Which includes student achievement, but is
also those other
stuff
measures
too.
I talked about. Right. So they were incentivized, obviously, to try to get that 2 years of higher rating, so they'd get that base pay bump. So anyway, lots of commentary. You've been writing about it, too, in the blogosphere. It basically amounts to this is a unique program. It's got a lot of factors that converge to make it successful, and it's likely not replicable easily.
And as people like to say, it didn't look at student achievement per se either, right? I mean, student achievement is a part of these ratings, but it did not say that. Because DC implemented impact, it saw its test scores go up.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
They may. I think they're looking at that in future studies, right?
Right. I mean, and that, again, that's a component of impact, right? So it's kind of rolled up in there, but it's not right. It's not like they isolated that one outcome.
Right. I mean, you would assume it should. I mean, if all this is going as well as it looks, certainly you would expect achievement to go up as long as the teachers who replaced the teachers who got fired, right, do reasonably good, right?
Right.
I mean, would be the big caveat. If they got replaced by lousy teachers, then you would not see improvements.
And they looked at that. I didn't have time, but let's see. Let me get my little fact.
We didn't even set that up, but a way for Amber to sneak in
teachers
more content.
Teachers who left DCPS at the end of 2010-11 had impact scores of 255 in their last year.
Yeah.
Newly hired next year had an average of 281 in their first year.
Yeah, good.
So
I wonder where those teachers who got fired or who left, I wonder what happened to them.
Where are they now?
Can I make a guess? I worry it's probably the answer might be Prince George's
County.
I mean, you know, we are in these metro labor markets. DC's is unusual in that it's just a few big districts, but, you know, there's other opportunities out there, and there's other districts who, you know, they don't pay as much as DC, but they need teachers.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the points that I think Rick made, and maybe someone else, that, you know, DC's a nice urban town, you know, they've got a larger pool, you know, to choose from in terms of talent. And that's one thing that that Michelle Rhee's team has continued to do, which is really aggressively pursue talent no matter where it is across the country. Yeah. They're going after it. So.
Which they absolutely should do, and we should celebrate that. And you can, you know, there's probably 10 10 cities in America, maybe 20, where you can do that pretty effectively. I would not probably put Dayton, Ohio, our hometown, on that list. You're going to need a different kind of strategy in some places.
Yes, you are.
Though we heard the other day that Springfield, Ohio, got 11,000 applicants for 200 teacher slots.
Yeah, we did.
We're not sure if we believe that. Or not. I don't know how they did that.
Things that make you go,
That's interesting. So, all right. Well, good. So, excellent. Thank you, Amber. I feel like I really understand that impact study now.
All right, good. And I redeemed myself a little bit, I hope, from last week. I even forgot what that study was, but I know we were all
It was so lame, we don't even know.
It was pretty lame. But
should we point out that this impact study was on MBER?
Yes.
Yeah, MBER working paper.
Yes. Good stuff.
We love economists, and it's shocking that a paper by economists found incentives work. All right, thanks. That is all the time we've got for today. Until next week.
I'm Michelle Gininger.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.